You're listening to the AHTB Cereals and Oilseeds podcast. Monthly highlights from your arable levy organisation.
Hello and welcome. I'm Judith Stafford and I'm the Knowledge Exchange Manager for Cereals and Oilseeds for the North of England and Northern Ireland. This month we're coming to you from Barnes Farm in Skelton in the northeast of England. We're at the summer meeting of the Saltburn Monitor Farm. We'll be talking about preparing for harvest. Later in the episode, we'll be hearing from our technical team with Jason Pohl on the latest glyphosate news. But first, we're here with Saltburn Monitor Farm host John Ainsley and members of the Monitor Farm Steering Group.
Steve Townsend from Sawfirst Farming. My input here is to help the transition into conservation agriculture and improving the soil.
Tim Wilson, local farmer, been direct drilling. Was invited by John to, from my experiences of direct drilling and from my little knowledge and trying to gain more.
Keith Atkinson, I work on the farm, spraying, combining, anything in general. Also run a small farm as well. It's a benefit to learn different things.
David Coates, I'm the farm agronomist. I've been coming here probably for between 15 and 20 years. So I've seen a lot of changes. Yeah, we seem as though we're all heading in the right direction anyway.
Robert Sullivan, farm consultant with GSC Grays. I put in, as well as being an agronomist, I actually do help with the figure side of things of the project.
John Ainsley, farm manager for Skelton Estates and monitor farm for Saltburn. The estate comprises of the in-hand farms of about 3,250 acres, of which there's about 1,400 acres are arable. The monitor farm area within that 1,400 acres amounts to 240 acres that we're working with this year and for the next 2 years. The rest of the estate is comprised of grassland that carries approximately 500 suckler cows and 1,300 ewes. The monitor farm experience so far, and we're sort of 10 months into it, has been somewhat diluted by the amount of rain we've had this winter as to what we've been able to do and how the crops look. However, the experiment as it is at the moment is going quite well, really, because it's showing the good bits, the bad bits, and what we hope to do improve over the next coming 2 years. So yes, pleased with that. Pleased with the help and support from the steering group that we have as well, because it's always very healthy discussions that we seem to have about where we go and what we do.
Interesting, informative, rotational changes. Increase the rotation from 2 weeks to oilseed rape, and probably going to include winter beans in it to work more along the lines of the conservation agriculture.
I think what it's done is actually made us try and think outside the box, rather than actually just saying we've done this the same way for so many years, it's sort of worked or it has been working. It's actually realising that what we're doing isn't probably going to be sustainable in the future, and actually trying to get us slightly ahead of the game. We've got the opportunity to actually look at things now and see how it works on this land, which we understand and we know, which hopefully will put us in a stronger position further down the line to actually react to whatever the changes are going forward with Brexit and all that side of things. So certainly what we've seen so far, it's interesting. There's some bits are going to work, some bits we maybe not work going forward, but if you don't try, you'll never know. And I think that's probably one of the positive things we've come out with. This is giving us the opportunity to try.
And John's been trying direct drill for the first time this year. We had some good discussions today along those lines.
We entered into this and using a direct drill or moving down that conservation agriculture route was definitely high on the agenda of our aims. And with it being such a wet back end here, the direct drill got used a lot more widely than we were aiming to do in the first place. And I think that it's certainly proved its worth this year, and, well, I'm sure it will in future years as well. Where we go, we'll see. Whether 3 years is long enough to see the improvement that will bring, I don't know. It'll probably take longer than that. But you've got to start somewhere. And I think that we can't, because of the changes that are coming, or look as if they're coming through Brexit and the change in UK agricultural policy, I do believe that we can't afford not to try these things and see how we make them work on the type of land that we have here. Well, we bought an old second-hand drill so that we were trying to keep the cost down. without going daft about these sort of things. The main aims is really to improve soil. We have a sterile brome problem on certain areas down here that we needed to get on top of. Looking at rotations, because it was continuous wheat, most of it. But equally, everything has to stack up with a bottom line margin, so we're going to keep a tight eye on that. And as we're only 10 months in, we probably haven't learnt a great deal at the moment, but hopefully by the end of harvest time, when we look at the gross margins, we will have, we'll have some answers. Whether we like them or not, I don't know yet. But nevertheless, those, whether they're palatable or not, will have to be taken on board, because there's no doubt there's change around the corner.
Is anyone else doing direct drilling?
Yeah, very similar to John. Gone from minimum tillage to direct drilling. Hoping to keep doing it. Very slow for us. We haven't done it maybe as quick as what John's trying to do. And we're placing liquid fertiliser with what we're drilling as well.
So now looking forward to harvest. How are things looking at Skelton?
Things are looking reasonably well, actually. They're probably looking better now than they did earlier in the year. Everything could do with a drop of rain. As we speak, we've had virtually nothing over the last month. And harvest, as usual, nature has a wonderful way of catching up. For all it looked as if it was going to be later, it's probably not going to be that much later. And between now and harvest time, it will be the usual cleaning sheds and trying to get caught up and ready for it and see what happens.
What's the best piece of harvest preparation advice you've ever been given?
Yeah, go on holiday.
Exactly.
You really caught me there with that one. I'm not sure. But the best bit of advice, if you...
I think one of the best advices farmers can have is to use a spade more, because there's too much tillage done by habit, particularly deep tillage, particularly subsoiling, where they do it without any observation and just find out whether it's really necessary. So I think invest in a spade to observe the soil at levels where you think they might need to be cultivated. And in a conservation agriculture system, we have to, I think, become root readers, because the roots will tell us how good or bad the soil is and to whether we need to mechanically intervene.
Anyone else?
I missed the question.
Get all your staff members on board so they all understand what's happening, when, where, what's expected of them.
I mean, that's one of the great things about this whole experience, is that all of John's advisors are in one room at one time. That doesn't happen very often. So I think that's something that I would hope would continue, because it keeps us all on track. It keeps us working the plan. And the old adage is, if you fail to plan, then plan to fail. And I think it's brought that better planning to the whole system, which in itself, whatever system it is good management.
Yes, I would just like to add to that, really, that when you've got everybody there and everybody's inclusive, you... your decision-making process, I'm pretty sure, becomes better and broader for that. Sometimes when you're doing it on your own, you can just sometimes go down a blind alleyway without being questioned about it. But everything's questioned in fairly great detail at the moment. Then we collectively see where we're going with it.
And now we'll hear from Jason Pohl and Paul Gosling in AHDB. Some of the latest work on glyphosate stewardship.
Key independent bodies and industry companies in the UK have joined forces to promote best practice to help ensure the continued availability and efficacy of glyphosate-based herbicidal products. Today I'm joined by AHDB's Paul Gosling to find out why stewardship of this active ingredient is so important. Paul, thanks for joining us today. Let's just set the scene a bit. Glyphosate's been with us for many decades, but its recent journey has been a little bit turbulent, hasn't it?
Morning, Jason. Yes, turbulence is a bit of an understatement. The process to renew the licence for glyphosate in the EU should have been pretty straightforward. Licensing of pesticides in Europe is meant to be based on science and evidence, and glyphosate had jumped through all the hoops required to be reauthorised. However, during that process, a range of environmental and health NGOs, plus green politicians across Europe, has latched onto glyphosate as a target for attack, probably due to its links to GM crops and global agribusiness, neither of which they like very much. But in any case, there was a large coordinated campaign by these groups against glyphosate, and the campaign was then given a boost when the World Health Organization's International Agency for Research on Cancer decided to class glyphosate as a probable carcinogen to humans back in 2015. However, the European Food Safety Authority, EFSA, concluded that glyphosate was unlikely to pose a carcinogenic hazard to humans, a conclusion also echoed by the European Chemicals Agency, ECHA, as well as the World Health Organization, regulators in Japan, Australia, New Zealand, Canada and the US. So in the end, it came down to politics, with regulators and farmers on one side of the argument and the NGOs and Greens on the other, and both sides trying to court public opinion. Several times votes in Brussels were delayed because agreement couldn't be reached, until in the end Germany unexpectedly switched sides to vote for renewal, and that gave the required majority for the renewal to go ahead.
Well, the active ingredients immediate future was secured. I think it was last December that they announced that we'd have glyphosate available to us for hopefully the next 5 years. So attention now turns to making sure it stays available to industry as long as possible. And that's why so many key stakeholders have got behind this latest initiative. So who's backing the stewardship messages?
Although the vote to renew glyphosate was won, its licence was only actually renewed for 5 years. And ordinarily in these circumstances, we'd expect it to be renewed for 15 years, and with countries like France suggesting they're actually going to ban glyphosate internally within 3 years. So nobody's expecting the next renewal to be easy. We could lose it at the next renewal. And in addition, there's also the potential for resistance to glyphosate to develop within weeds, and we could lose it by that route. So industry players, including AHDB, the glyphosate manufacturers, the NFU, the Weed Resistance Action Group and the AIC, have recognised these twin threats and so have come together to try and head them off. That's by promoting stewardship guidelines for the end users. As an industry, we want to be on the front foot with this, not on the defensive as we were in the last renewal process.
So there are many angles to stewardship, and glyphosate's no exception. So let's start with crop residues. It's a topic that really can grab headlines, but what are the facts?
Well, during the licence renewal process, those who are opposing the glyphosate sought to highlight the presence of residues in some foods and drinks, suggesting they were a threat to human health. And the Soil Association in particular ran a campaign focused around bread. And yes, it's true, glyphosate residues are sometimes found in bread and other foodstuffs. However, the level of residues is always very low, even when they are found, and EFSA have concluded they pose no threat to human health. Indeed, EFSA have recommended that permitted level of residues allowed in things like barley and wheat can be increased because glyphosate poses such a low risk, based on the evidence.
So a new publication has been issued by HGV, however, that outlines the steps that people should take in the run-up to harvest to help minimise residues. Why have you done that, and what are the key things that should be considered?
Well, even though the residues found in food are not a health risk, they're best avoided, if only to reassure the public. We know why residues sometimes occur in grain, and we know how to minimise them. So this publication is there to remind farmers and agronomists of the right way to use glyphosate at this timing, no matter what brand they're using. In the updated version, produced with the help of Monsanto, we've improved the clarity of the clean messages and added a visual guide to help get things right. Basically, it's about checking that weeds are at the susceptible growth stage before applying glyphosate for weed control, because there's no point in putting it on if it's not going to work, and about ensuring that the grain is at the correct maturity level so it's not going to take up glyphosate, and avoiding drift.
You mentioned there about maturity levels and how it's really important to make sure the crop is at the right stage of maturity to make an application of glyphosate. And the new guidelines have some great visual information in there to help people understand when their crop is at the right stage. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, Paul?
Yes, it's really important in wheat and barley not to apply glyphosate unless the grain moisture is below 30%. If you apply at a higher level than that, there is a possibility that glyphosate could be translocated into the grain, causing problems with the residues. So what we're looking for is the hard dose stage at the grain, so about growth stage 87. And there is a visual guide, as you say, in the new guidelines to show how you can find that right growth stage, that right moisture level, before you can apply glyphosate. In oilseed rape, it's a little bit trickier, but again, in the guide is the details of how you can get the right moisture content so you're not going to cause problems with residues.
Another angle to stewardship is helping to prevent resistance arising in wheat populations. I understand that the UK hasn't had a particular issue here to date, but resistance is out there globally. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. I'm sure everyone involved in farming and a lot of people outside the farming industry are aware of the problems in the USA with glyphosate-resistant weeds caused by the repeated use of glyphosate on glyphosate-tolerant GM crops, often to the exclusion of any other herbicides or cultivation which might kill weeds. But probably what's less well known is actually there's a global occurrence of glyphosate-resistant weeds even where GM crops aren't being grown. And we even have glyphosate-resistant weeds in Europe, those yet on a small scale. In the UK, we don't have any glyphosate resistance yet, but with the widespread use of glyphosate, especially in situations where we have blackgrass resistance, it's a real risk and we need to try and manage that risk.
Well, herbicide options generally are becoming leaner, whether through tightening regulation or loss of efficacy. And this means that people need to make the most of those opportunities between that precious between crop period for weed control. It's never been so important as now. So what top tips do you have for people looking to make a glyphosate application this coming autumn?
Because glyphosate has become so key to managing blackgrass in particular, we really need to do all we can to stop resistance occurring. If it does occur, stop it spreading. The guidelines produced by the Weed Resistance Action Group, they're on our website, have effectively reduced this side of stewardship to four key points. So the first one is to prevent survivors, which means kill any plants which aren't killed by glyphosate. Don't try applying more glyphosate. Maximise efficacy, so that means getting the right dose for the weed size that's there and applying in good conditions, because we know that reduced doses and reduced efficacy can increase the risk of resistance. Use alternatives where you can, so there's other herbicides or cultivations, and monitor success. So after you've applied glyphosate, look to see if there are survivors. If there are, remove them, and if you think you've got resistance, get those plants tested.
That's some sound advice there. And our team will be out and about this summer, I understand, at many events talking about glyphosate management. So where can people find out more?
Well, we'll be at Cereals on the AHDB stand this year, and AHDB are hosting a discussion at 1 p.m. on the first day of Cereals in a Cereals Conversations series on glyphosate stewardship. There you'll be able to question the experts from the Weed Resistance Action Group and the glyphosate manufacturers. In addition, AHDB will be holding a series of regional events over the summer, and you can find details about those on our website.
Brilliant. Thanks, Paul, for joining us today. So planning for the 2022 renewal process is already underway, so glyphosate users really must be proactive and follow that best practice. And AHDB to help you create a new webpage to host all that guidance. And that webpage is located on our website, cereals.ahdb.org.uk/glyphosate.
That's all from us. Listen in again next month, but in the meantime, if you'd like more harvest resources, visit cereals.ahdb.org.uk/harvest.